98.5 The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. CJ Wilson going to join us at 9:20. All right, so what is going on with this Mike Lockhart?
All right, so this Twitter user tweeted out a voicemail that he got from an unknown number. He woke up and there was like a message on there, and he didn't know where it was from or what was going on, and this is the audio that was left on his voicemail.
Sierra, Oscar, Sierra, India, Tango, India, Sierra, Delta, India, Romeo, Echo, Foxtrot, Oscar, Romeo, Yankee, Oscar, Uniform, Tango, Oscar, Echo, Victor, Alpha, Charlie, Uniform, Alpha, Tango, Echo, Bravo, Echo, Charlie, Alpha, Uniform, Tango, India, Oscar, Uniform, Sierra, Tango, Hotel, Echo, Yankee, Alpha, Romeo, Echo, November, Oscar, Tango, Hotel, Uniform, Mike, Alpha, November, 0429339642300.
All right, so he gets this voicemail message and he tweets it?
Yes, he tweets out the voicemail, and what that actually is saying is, danger, SOS, it is dire for you to evacuate, be cautious, they are not human, SOS, danger, SOS.
What?
They are not human? And what is that, like Morse code?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like military code.
All right. So he tweets this out.
Yeah, and then he gets a text message just after, and it's in another language.
Oh,
and
no.
It says, end the post you just shared about the recording on your phone.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Imagine.
Oh, man.
No.
So there's the thinking is that this is a military thing.
Yeah, something top secret just went haywire and ended up on a phone.
So basically it's confirming that they're aliens.
I mean, that's what it seems like.
Now, has anything else happened to the guy?
No, he did tweet out that somebody took a picture of his house when he was out in his car at 3 in the morning.
Really?
Yeah.
When did he get the message?
When did he get it? A couple days ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he got the message, he put it out there, and there was a government official 2 hours later.
I think it was pretty soon after.
Or we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he just saw the one guy.
But the text message came soon after he
tweeted.
Does
he still have an active Twitter account?
I was doing some investigating.
Or is his social media just scrubbed from the internet?
And it was partially taken down. He can't do there's not a total access with it right now.
What?
Now, what dumbass puts that on Twitter, first of all?
Somebody who wants to be captured and never seen again?
Exactly. If that gets sent to me, I'm just deleting it and saying, all right. But he has to put it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's everybody now. You have to be first out there.
Because it's so funny.
Yeah.
You have no meter of paranoia in your brain. You're so...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, to the paranoia, Keith and I... briefly, it was a short-lived segment on the night program. We did Area 98.5 every Friday night, where we would take conspiracy theories, and it really just turned into a lot of alien stuff. And I was very paranoid just talking about it on I was worried the government was going to be taking pictures of my home just talking about these things. Never mind tweeting out random voicemails of Morse code and they're not human. You're in danger.
What did it mean again?
It said, danger, SOS. It is dire for you to evacuate. Be cautious. They are not human. SOS. Danger, SOS.
So essentially, they're aliens.
That's what it seems like to me. I don't know.
Living among us.
Like a ghoul.
I mean, I watched a lot of Unsolved Mysteries as a kid, so I was always a skeptic anyways that it probably was true. But hey, this is...
Who doesn't think this is frightening. Who doesn't think it's true?
Jeez.
What, aliens?
Yeah.
Here on the planet?
Yeah, not necessarily here on the planet, but who doesn't believe in aliens?
Well, I have to assume in the vast universe that there's other life forms.
Right, exactly.
Haven't they found water on some planets and stuff?
Yes, they're probably here.
In this
solar system. Let's be honest with each other, they're probably here.
And how many people know about it? Because it seems like they would you would just get killed right away.
Based on the calls to Area 98.5, quite a few people are aware of it.
Yeah, when you're on at night, you're going to get a lot of people that believe in aliens.
Yep, there's a lot of pro aliens out there.
Yeah, Rich was driving through the middle of nowhere, which he likes to do, in the only
the Bridgewater Triangle.
Yes, it was the Bridgewater Triangle. And
it's dangerous there.
He had on Art Bell. You know who Art Bell is?
No.
He is this guy that has this show. I don't even know it's still on. But it was all about aliens and conspiracy theories. And so Rich is driving with Mary, and it's dark out, and they're in the desert. And this guy calls in, and he says, I've taken my phone, and I've dug to hell, and I have audio of hell. And it's just like... So he's driving in the middle of nowhere, listening to someone reporting the sounds of hell.
Yep. I mean, that sounded like a believable representation of hell.
Yeah, well, listen, of course.
It's kind of how I envision it.
Well, no one knows what's going on underneath the dirt.
Yeah.
I mean, if you dig long enough, I mean, that's all just a sea of mystery. Yes, Dan.
May have some gasoline to throw onto this fire. Josh and Ben are telling me that the numbers at the end of the message.
I was going to ask about those. What are those?
The numbers at the end apparently are the coordinates for where the Air Malaysia Flight 371 went down.
No.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
No.
Well.
Okay.
You got to dig into it. You got to dig into it, Adam.
All right, so get out. These are not human, and it's the Air Malaysia flight that went missing.
Wow.
Yep.
We cracked the case.
All right. Scott can help us with the alien stuff.
Here we go. Scott, go ahead.
Well, it's not about the alien stuff, but I was in the Navy for 20 years, and those alphanumeric numbers, when they call it out, it's what's called the emergency action message. They send them out all the time. They mean different things. And it's codes to submarines and stuff like that for missiles and things like that. They send them out to mean different things, changing position, all sorts of things for submarines underway, ballistic missile submarines and things. They're called emergency action messages, and they're sent out by the TACCOM planes. Some Air Force guy can probably explain it better than me.
Okay, but
yes.
But so what about the they're not human part? Say all the other stuff in there. Okay, you can explain that. What about the not human part?
I don't know about that. It's someone that probably had access, and it's a joke of some kind to someone. I don't know, but
that's what they want you to believe.
No,
man.
Seriously, I don't think that's it at all. I believe a submarine found the missing Air Malaysia flight, and there were aliens there when they arrived.
Underwater aliens.
Underwater aliens.
That's right. They have spooky fish out there.
There you go.
I mean, you know, a lot of undiscovered territory. That'd be a good place for an alien to hide.
They called the numbers. That's exactly the longitude and latitude where they discovered the Air Malaysia flight. And when the submarine arrived, they found life forms from another planet.
Wow. All right, Sean, go ahead.
Wow.
Take a minute, guys.
Hey.
How you doing? So I'm a cop. I work at night. And when there's nothing going on, there's this show called Coast to Coast. It's on from like 12 a.m. to like 5 a.m. And you get it's a show. And
it's the Art Bell show. That's the Art Bell show.
What?
That's the Art Bell show that I was talking about.
Yeah. It's like the whack jobs calling from like Montana. And they're like, oh, I've seen this guy in my field.
So this show sounds great.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
It's awesome. You just got to listen to it. It's crazy. It's a great entertainment for, you know, when there's nothing going on at night, you know.
Yeah,
I take offense that he keeps saying that. There's lots going on at night, especially here on 98.5 The Sports.
He said it was from midnight.
He did say six. I don't like the territory that he's infringing on there, but sure.
Well, the programming for 2 to 6 in the morning here, you can't argue with.
No, that's true.
I mean, that is a big-time entertainment.
Why would you ever seek out an alternative to that? I don't know.
I mean, it is a good show. They actually have the sounds of hell. And the best thing is Art Bell, like, if someone says, I've lowered my phone into hell,
yep.
It's not like he's like, okay, whatever. He's like, wow.
Interesting.
Like, this is what hell sounds like,
how old
huh?
How old is Art Bell, would you say?
He's got to be pretty old, but this show has been on forever. He has to do it, like, something horrible happened to one of his kids. He's got to do it, like, from a secret location. He can't let anyone know where he is. He does it from, like, his house, which is in the middle of nowhere.
Well, 72, by the way. So I take back what I was about to say. Does he have, like, a succession plan for the show? Because this sounds very interesting, but maybe now if we're broadcasting from secret locations. I don't want to get mixed up.
I think
up
he had a that. Kid that got, like, kidnapped or something. Yeah, Jason, go ahead.
So we don't need that.
No.
All right. So what we have right now is we've connected the Malaysia airline to a very creepy message, and my question is whether or not that message could actually be the last recorded black box recording from the pilot giving a location and the fact that there's aliens and they're not human.
That's why
that's what caused the plane crash.
That's why the plane went down.
As opposed to a submarine finding an aliens, et cetera. What if that's the actual
Wallach, stupid idea. This guy's got it, I think.
I'm sorry.
I know it's perfect.
Just spitballing here. We're not all going to be perfect.
I'm not joking with this guy. I think this is a good theory.
That's the only thing I could think of.
It's a much better theory than Wallach's.
Military related. We haven't actually heard the black box recordings as far as I know. What if that literally was the last thing that they could get in there, and that was not meant to go out to this voicemail, et cetera?
Makes more sense than anything I've heard. I'll tell you, that dumbass putting that thing on Twitter. Whoa, boy.
See you later, buddy.
What was the tweet? Like, get a load of this.
Basically, I've seen the tweet now. Basically, that's what it is.
We were just taking calls at night about,
check this out.
tall grays in Roswell, New Mexico, and I got very paranoid about that. Never mind tweeting out coordinates.
Yeah, by playing that, we probably got some investigation.
Oh, that's a good point.
Happening.
How long would it take to dig that out? That's what I want to know.
I think it's like 10 minutes. Yeah. Like, once you get down to, like, the hard dirt.
Are there any sedans waiting for us in a parking lot?
There you go.
In your car, at 98.5. On your phone, on the new Sports Hub app. And on your computer. 98.5thesportshub.com. Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. CJ Wilson, former Major League Baseball pitcher. You know who he is. We have him on quite often. CJ Wilson Racing right now he's got a few cars in this 12 Hours of Sebring. It's one of the most prestigious sports car races in the world. And he is in Florida, in Sebring, Florida. CJ, here, this is the place to be. I hear it's lovely there.
Well, it's pretty cold right now for Florida standards, but I don't know. The track is awesome. It's a great experience, but I wouldn't retire here personally.
Yeah, Declan, who is the one who gets in touch with me all these things, is miserable. I just want you to know that he's completely miserable.
As long as Declan's miserable, I'm doing my job.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, CJ, you've been outspoken and you've been involved in the business side of baseball. What was your opinion of how free agency went down this year? I mean, players were signing less than, you know, the offers. What do you call the offers?
Moustakas really got...
Yeah, Moustakas did. Lance Lynn did. Yep. What do you make about that? Do you think it was collusion?
I think a lot of players and their agents are miscalculating the benefit of the qualifying offer, personally. I think a lot of guys, I mean, obviously you've got guys like JD Martinez or, you know, Chris Sale or somebody like that that's going to, you know, land a 4 or 5 year deal in really like any kind of climate. But I mean, you know, it's a challenging thing. If you're not a top tier guy and you turn down a qualifying offer, I mean, you've seen it with guys over the last couple of years, they're turning down like a 1-17 deal. And I just think that that's, you know, I don't know. I was in a position where I was a fairly sought after free agent and had a couple teams that I could negotiate with and stuff, but you know, it never goes the way you want it to go. You always think it's going to be like some recruiting trip from, you know, one of these movies where the guy goes to the college and then he's got like babes everywhere and they're like, yo, this is the jam. Like, it's going to be awesome. And then, you know, it's really kind of like, well, we'll give you a 3-year deal. And it's like, yeah, I want a 5-year deal. And they're like, okay, we'll have fun. And that's sort of how it goes.
Is there, when you're a free agent and you know you're going to get money, but it's taking time, how nerve wracking is that, if at all?
It is nerve-wracking because, you know, it's a spotlight issue. You know, you've got this situation where your family and everybody, they're trying to make plans because they want to buy the hat. You know, they want to support, they want to know. And you're talking to teams that are basically rivals with each other all the time. You know, it's like I signed with the Angels and I had, you know, people that were like, oh, man, stay in Texas. And people were like, yo, man, why aren't the Yankees picking you up? And like, what about the Red Sox? Would you play there? And you just have to say like, oh, I love everywhere. It's all great. You know? And they're like, what about Oakland? You're like,
it's great there too.
Cool, man. There's some good food there. So, you know, you just have to make the most of it. But I think a lot of it is agent miscalculation because the agents benefit a lot from the players and, you know, don't necessarily contribute to the positivity of what players are bringing to the table. And they stand to, by compromising or signing a little early or a qualifying offer, you know, the agent doesn't get as much money. So they're kind of like, yeah, let's roll the dice because it's not their life, you know. And I really am very skeptical of the agent process for the most part. I mean, you know, there's just too many certified agents and it's a whole thing. But that's the business side of it that sucks, I think.
Do you think you would have liked playing for the Red Sox, given the scrutiny and the negativity in this town?
The negativity, I love that.
Oh, yeah.
People are so bitter. No, you know, it would have been great to play with Pedroia and having a guy like that on your team. I think everybody sees a guy like him and the hustle and the heart that he puts into baseball, and they would have loved to have that. I mean, it would have been great to have lasted a little bit longer and had that chance. But, you know, I just did too much damage to my cartilage as a little kid playing Little League that, I mean, you know, Chris Sale has crazy mechanics, and he's still okay. So, knock on wood, and I'm here after having five arm surgeries, like watching my race team, you know, drive around in circles. So this is the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah, I'm sure you're living a life of misery. I hope you saved some of that money. But you mentioned Little League. Do you think you threw too much when you were a kid?
100%. Yeah, that's really what happened. I mean, I pitched too much, and you know, I pitched through too much pain, and it kept going, and kind of passed the point of no return, and ended up having, you know, cartilage shred off, and you know, splinter, and then. And now I don't have any cartilage in my elbow, so as I could be in as good a shape as possible, but it's not like a jogging contest. You know, it's baseball. You know, you have to be pretty effective, and I didn't want to go out there and, you know, end up getting a sixth and a seventh arm surgery. I probably could have kept playing at a very diminished role or something like that, but you know, my last season, effectively, I threw, I don't know, 90 innings or something like that, or 80 innings, and it was like I couldn't even play catch in between games. I had to basically pitch in the game, get my elbow drained, and then ice it for 3 days and go lift weights and run and then do shoulder exercises and then try to go pitch again 5 days later. And it was kind of a disaster, you know. And, you know, I didn't really want to put myself through that, you know, at the end of the day. It wasn't worth it.
Do you look at your youth coaches and kind of go, what the hell were you thinking?
Oh, yeah. No, I've got plenty of stories about idiot youth coaches. I think we all do. Anybody that's had a son or a daughter play youth sports, they've got some jerk coach that they've had to deal with, or a jerk parent, or you know, whatever. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, amateur sports are really a battleground of, you know, parent egos more than anything else. The kids just want to go out there and play, and then the parents and the coaches are just in this constant thing to see who can, you know, who can have the best, you know, campfire stories or whatever. And it leads to a lot of unnecessary injuries and a lot of unnecessary stress for the kids.
I want to hear one of the worst ones. I mean, this guy worked with a future major league pitcher. How did this one coach, you know, try to destroy you? That's what I want to find out about.
No, I wouldn't say it was one coach. I would say every coach doesn't care, you know, as much as they say they care. Some coaches really care. Some coaches really get it. And those are the ones that say, like, hey, let's work on this, let's work on that. But then the other ones that are like, what are you, a baby? Rub some dirt on it, you little pussy. And they say stuff like that. Like, hey,
okay. How old are you?
You know, I mean, I was, you know, 12 or 13 or whatever. And coaches like that.
But you know,
and
CJ,
it wasn't my dad. And it wasn't my dad.
Okay.
So, ruling that out. My dad wasn't really like a big baseball guy. I mean, he liked baseball, but he didn't play or anything like that. So he knew his limitations, and he only coached so we could spend more time together and things like that. He wasn't necessarily like, you know, it wasn't like Bryce Harper where it's like, okay, I've turned my whole life into a situation where I'm going to have Conan the Barbarian smashing home runs at 16 years old, you know, and like teach my kid how to lift weights and like, you know, take like Ruthian cuts at high school kid fastballs. And you know, and I wasn't like freakishly strong or big or anything like that. Like when you look at photos of Mike Trout in high school, he's exactly the same size he is now, and he's playing against these poor little 15-year-old kids that threw like 80 miles an hour. And it's like amazing that he ever got any pitches to hit. But you know, there's those guys like Josh Beckett or Hamilton or Trout that are just like phenoms that just come out of nowhere and. They're throwing 95 miles an hour when they're 17 years old, and they're, you know, hitting home runs 500 feet, and that wasn't me at all. So I really actually stupidly listened to some of my coaches, and but the best advice that I got from, you know, in baseball stuff, it was generally from older players, and it was from, like, reading the books that guys like Tom Seaver or Wade Boggs, Nolan Ryan, you know, that those guys had written, and Ted Williams. And so, you know, you read those books and you retain a lot more than your coach tells you something. It's like, well, Ted Williams said to do this. And they're like, well, why would you do what Ted Williams did? It's like, oh, because he's like the greatest hitter of all time. I'm just going, you're an idiot. I'm going to listen to Ted Williams. Thanks. Forget it, you know?
Me personally, I would listen to the youth coach over Ted Williams. I feel like they have a good knowledgeable experience. They know what they're doing.
And CJ, there's so much pressure on a coach of 12 year olds. I mean, you got to win. I mean, at that point, it's
they're not getting laid unless they bring home that championship Little League ring, right?
That's so, right. So nothing turns the ladies on more than a championship Little League ring.
That's a good point.
Yeah, hey, you got to come out and see me coach these little kids. It's amazing. I just imagine that, and I just kind of laugh to myself, but. That's kind of the issue, though. You know, it's like I had a couple really good coaches. A guy named CJ Ellison was a really good coach of mine. A guy named Chris Ogawa was a really good coach. And then, you know, Don Stenton, who was my junior college coach. And then other than that, it was just kind of shenanigans all the way through youth baseball. Everybody else was just, everybody that I did not mention was kind of a shenanigan of a coach. And that was just, you know, that's just the way it was. But, you know, I had my high school coach one time, I told him my arm hurt too bad to finish the game and pitch the seventh inning. And cause I had thrown six innings and 110 pitches, or whatever. He goes, well, if you're too big of a wimp, then you can just go home. So I was like, well, I'm going to pitch in the major leagues one day. I'm not going to blow my arm out so we can beat Corona Del Mar High School. We've got eight other guys that can throw one inning. We're winning by three. I think we're okay, you know? And I mean, I stood up for myself and I ended up going home. And then, you know, a couple years later, you know, he was like, yeah, it's really good you stood up to me. I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, man, yeah, how many elbows have you ruined? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and that's the reality. Like, I was always pitching to be a major leaguer and I was hitting to be a major leaguer. I didn't want to be like a star, you know, Little League kid. I didn't really care about that. I was like, well, I'm not going to blow my arm out so we can beat, you know, Westminster Little League. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, the CJ, there's this pace of play issue. Baseball's frantically trying to find ways to attract the youth audience.
Extra innings. You have a guy on second base now in the minor leagues to start extra innings.
Yeah. I mean, you play.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. What are your feelings on these pace of play innovations?
Just make the strikes on the real size. And then pitchers will be able to throw more strikes and be encouraged to throw up like high fastballs and stuff that set up the breaking ball, that set up the changeup, that set up the, you know, all the other stuff. Right now the strike zone is so small that you've got to nibble or you're just going to get lit, and guys don't want to get lit because they don't want to get sent home back to, you know, Tulsa and, or, you know, I don't know, Scranton. Who wants to go to Scranton, right? So the big challenge for as a pitcher, I mean, I can say this for me, I worked really hard to not give up home runs, to not give up hits and stuff like that. And I didn't have Chris Sale stuff. So I had to nibble and I had to throw breaking balls on the corners and I had to throw sinkers that kind of backdoor the strike zone and stuff like that. And I had to throw, I walked more guys than I probably should have because the strike zone was so hard to get into, you know, because you know, you got a lineup where you got, you know, Judge and Stanton and all these guys back to back, or, you know, you got Hanley and all these other guys that will literally rip your face off if you throw the ball down the middle. So the strike zone's too small. It's so simple. It's like the simplest, you know, fix. And if they can just get that right, then, you know, but there's the umpires are a union and that's a whole issue there. But, you know, I think that's the number one thing. That's why games were shorter, because they used to call chest-high strikes back in the 60s, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's this perception with people in baseball that fans want to see 10-8 games, and they might tell you that, but if you're watching a game, I'd rather have a game be, you know, 2.5 hours long and it'd be a pitcher's duel than I want to sit around for 3.5 hours on a Sunday night watching Yankees-Red Sox. I think that's right. Counterintuitive. You can't do both.
Right. And this is the thing, right? The baseball fans, they like baseball.
Yeah.
And there's no baseball fan in the country that's going to sit there and go, you know what? If this game was just 10 minutes shorter, that would change my life.
Right.
No one says that.
Right.
No real baseball fan. So if they're like, oh, well, we've got to grow the game. Well, the biggest mistake that the commissioner's office can make, or baseball in general, is thinking that there's this infinite ramp. They're like, oh, we'll play games in London and Amsterdam. And it's like, yeah, that's cool, but, like, who's going to blow their ACL out because, you know, Herg Fagergestein is dragging the field and doesn't know what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, it doesn't make any sense to me. So you've got to really be practical. And baseball, you know, baseball is not going to grow forever unless we have, you know, unless we're able to recruit more countries to play. But at the same time, that's going to lead to lower, you know, quality of games at some point, because you're going to have people that don't have the development and the understanding that kids do in America and the Dominican and Venezuela and stuff. Like, on the, in this region of the world, you know, in Japan, I guess, as well, but, like, we really understand baseball because we've been playing it for decades, you know? So the anecdotal knowledge of the casual baseball fan in St. Louis is infinitely higher than the smartest baseball person in the history of the United Kingdom. It's just that's right. The way it is. So, and baseball is such a peculiar sport, and just like racing or anything else, like, you know, the average person just thinks, oh yeah, well, you know, Tony Stewart just has a heavier right foot than Jeff Gordon. That's why he beats him, or vice versa. You know, that's not really how it goes. There's like a lot that goes into it, and the subtlety of the game is fun. And, you know, I think the technology that they have now with K-Zone and player track and all that stuff, it's interesting. I think it's cool to see launch angles and velocity off the bat and things like that. It's interesting to see, like, oh, this guy hit the ball or threw the ball like this, or Arrieta's curveball spins at this RPM. That people like that information, and it's okay. You know, it's okay to have, you know, to nerd out, but you need time to nerd out. The whole, like, oh, we're going to have a 7-10 game that last 2.5 hours, there's no chance.
Right.
To try to force it into that is really against tradition. And it's like, okay, well, let's just have home run derby once a week, and we'll just send our best guys against your best guys. And instead of playing a doubleheader, play one real game, and then we'll play trick games. You know, we'll play over the line. We'll do, like, some sort of, you know, trick shot bowling contest for pitchers to, like, how many glass panes can they break with, like, a curveball that's outside of the strike zone. I mean, like, all that stuff is stupid. You know, let's just play baseball, call the strike zone, and, you know, it would make more sense if they had, I guess, yeah, just a better flow with that. But you can't force baseball to be faster, because it's not really going to make that much of a difference if it's 5 minutes faster. It doesn't matter.
All right, CJ, so you have this racing team, and it keeps growing, correct?
Yeah, we're growing up levels, so now we're in the major leagues now. Effectively, this is like our debut weekend in the WeatherTech Series, and the WeatherTech Series is the premier class for sports car racing. So you have IndyCar, you have NASCAR, and you have sports cars. And sports cars are, you know, they look like regular cars, sort of, right? And then we're racing the Acura NSX this year in the Endurance Championship, and you know, this is our first race, so it's a historic race. It's you know, one of these things that's been going on for 60-70 years, and we're just, you know, hoping to have a good weekend where we go home with all of our body parts and you know, finish in the top 10 or something like that. Just nice modest goal, and then kind of work our way into the process.
So you're doing a 24-hour race? Like, you're going to be driving in a 24-hour race?
Eventually, yeah, but no, but this race is 12 hours.
Yeah.
And then, the 24-hour races, they have Le Mans, which is the goal, and then, Daytona, which is another big deal. So my thing that I'm trying to do is, as a driver personally, I'm trying to grow, but I've sort of skipped steps, if you imagine. So I'm trying to fill in my resume by doing some go-karting and doing some other stuff that some of the other guys have done. In order to get them to the top level. And so I'm doing that kind of testing and training in between. And it's very technical, you know, and it really has to do with this odd sensation of you're just about, like, out of control, and then the car figures out in its own way, because of how it's engineered, how to grip. And so you feel like you're sliding and you're, you know, kind of like on ice, but then all of a sudden you get just a ton of mechanical grip, and then you can go around the corner at, like, you know, 150 miles an hour, 130 miles an hour. But the thing is, at 95 or 110 or 120, you feel like you're dead. You're
right.
Like, oh, I'm going to crash your face first in the wall. And then something happens where the car goes beep, 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 and then it just hooks, and then you're like, oh, okay, I made it. And trusting that process is very, it's not very intuitive, you know, so you have to work at that. And that's just kind of where I'm at. So on some levels, I'm very advanced, and other levels, I'm very basic. But, you know, I'm kind of like a double-A player as a racer right now. But our team now is in the majors, so I'm not going to pollute that by promoting myself like that, like the movie where the kid buys the twins and puts himself on the team.
Little Big League, Little Big League, yeah.
Great.
Little Big League, there you go. Yeah. I think Ken Herbeck was in that, right? That's a good name. So our goal is this year to kind of feel out this series and get you know, kind of like our September call-up, if you will. and then next year do a full season and really get everything ready. And hopefully by then I'll be ready to race. And if not, oh, man, just watching the guy just crash right now. Oops. I've got a monitor on right now. The guy hit the brakes. Bad things happen. He hit the brakes, and his rear tire's locked up, and he just went and just cut left right into the wall. Oh, and now he's just looking very kind of demoralized, sitting in the freaking car.
All right. CJ Wilson Racing, look for CJ Wilson Racing to continue to grow. CJ Wilson, it's always a pleasure. We really appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, well, here's my question for you guys. Who's going to have more innings this year for the Sox? Porcello, Sale, or Price? What are we going to get?
Most innings of those three?
Sale.
Sale. Yeah. Easily Sale.
Okay.
No?
Can Porcello rebound? That's the question.
That is the question. Mm. Do you think Porcello, that was kind of an outlier when he that the Cy Young season?
Well, I think his strength has always been the fact that he can get balls to the sink, you know, his changeup and his sinker. He's got to utilize those pitches. If he throws harder now than he did when he was younger, but four seamers get hit pretty far. So that's I think the thing that goes along back to the strike zone thing, that if they were calling high strikes and he could throw four seamers up and then throw sinkers down, he'd be really, really unhittable. But you know, that's the big challenge. Everybody, you know, I mean, somebody posted a thing on Twitter the other day of Sale, like a home plate cam, and I was like, that's disgusting. I'm just glad I don't hit off that guy. He's just nasty.
Yeah, his arm angle is, like, unfair. Ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're a left-handed hitter, that's frightening.
Yep. But I look for it. I'm a big baseball fan, so I watch as much as I can. Now that I don't have a dog in the fight, I can effectively, you know, I can root for favorite players and favorite teams and stuff. So I look for... it's going to be interesting in the East this year, definitely.
Yeah, it's pitching versus offense. I mean, it is going to be interesting. That Yankees lineup looks like it's going to be sick. So
there's going to be some long games.
Yeah, so they always have to be. They always have to be long when the two teams play. All right, CJ Wilson, it's always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, appreciate it. There you go, CJ Wilson. Regular
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. Is Bird in there? Bird, can you go step up to the microphone, please? Bird, did you enjoy today's show?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so you are you being honest?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what did you like about it?
I wasn't really paying attention.
Okay, very good. Thank you. At least he's being honest.
Well, kind of. You asked him if he was being honest. He's like, yeah, no, I liked it. Are you being honest?
Can
yeah.
Can you put Bird back on the microphone, please? I'm just curious. What percentage of the show do you think you paid attention to?
First hour, I was sleeping. Like, mentally.
Right. I understand. You're under no. There's. You don't have to listen to the show.
No, I do. I want to.
Okay. Okay. So, what did you hear?
I heard you talking to CJ Wilson.
Yep.
Did you like that interview?
I listened about for 5-10 minutes. And I watched the Avengers Infinity Stone trailer.
Okay.
Jesus God.
Full on.
Did you hear when we had Giardi on?
I think I missed a call or two. Call or two. Too. My bad.
All right. Just like okay.
Yep.
Did you hear when we had Giardi on and he was talking about this breaking news?
Yeah, with the Patriots and Bill Belichick. Yes, I was listening to that.
Did you like that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
All right.
Did you like This Snow is Bananas?
Yeah. Oh, it's funny.
Okay. Thank you, Bird.
All right.
Huh. It's honest. He's nothing but honest.
Did that just happen? He actually, that back and forth with you just happened.
Yeah. Huh?
Okay.
By the way, if you sit in that chair, you're obsessed with comic book movies.
Yes.
That's a good point. Because Adolfo... Nick and Bird, all obsessed with comic book movies.
That's true.
All right, something interesting out of the Nate Solder press conference.
Correct? Yes, Nate Solder was holding his press conference at this hour with the New York Giants and the media. And her name is Patricia Traynor. She works for the New Athletic website, and she covers the Giants for the Athletic in New York City. And apparently Solder told the media that the Patriots and Giants offered roughly the same amount of money, and he chose to go to New York instead. Now, it's been pointed out to me on social media after I retweeted that the Patriots didn't offer as much guaranteed money as part of the full package. I don't know the structure of both deals,
right.
But of course, the money was about the same. That's all we know.
All right, so Everyone thought, I mean, Solder, and for good reason. I mean, Solder's going through some difficult stuff, and Boston is the place you want to be.
Oh, and one more thing. On a good piece of news, he said to the media his son has got one chemo treatment left, and then he's done.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that is really good.
That is great.
That's great. I mean, I can't imagine going through that with your kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't always have to say things like that, but that's truly terrible. But, not the news that he only has one left, but just going through the
right. Yes. Right.
Want to clarify that.
Right.
But Jones, is that interesting to you?
Well, yeah, because you see a lot of people going, well, the market was just out of control for Nate Solder. He's not worth it. And like I happen to agree that, but I also don't really care that they lost out on him that much.
Right.
You know, I felt that way before he signed elsewhere, and I still feel that way now. My sense is people who wanted him, fans and media, people who wanted him, their justification is, well, I wanted Nate Solder, but not at that price.
Right.
Well, it sounds like the Patriots were willing to extend almost to that price. So that means the Patriots wanted him, and they lost him. So what, I mean, that makes me feel a little shakier about it. The fact that they were willing to extend almost to $15 million a year. And again, you're right, Wallach. We don't know the full breakdown.
And guaranteed money means
right,
a ton.
Right, correct. Right. So we don't know the full breakdown there. But if the Patriots were willing to get into the stratosphere of the Giants, that means they really wanted him. They probably overextended in their mind. They didn't just draw a line in the sand and stay disciplined to their financial approach. They probably overextended and still lost the player. So the fact they desperately wanted him and didn't get him is telling. And I think Tom Curran has had a really fair second guess on this. Even if the market got out of control, what prevented them from getting to Solder midway through the year in training camp last year and getting him at a more reasonable deal? What prevented them from doing that?
Right. Especially it's that position of such need that they feel that it is. I mean, they obviously put a high value on it. So the good news is that there's so many tackles available.
they're falling from the sky.
They're everywhere.
Right.
Yep.
Considering there might be a guard that's taken in the top seven picks, that tells you all you need to know. Apparently, if the Jets miss out on the quarterback, they're taking that guard from Notre Dame.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Jets just need players,
that'll
man.
That'll get you to buy personal seat licenses
that's
and things
true.
Like that.
Won't get a lot of fans in, but it might help
the
team a little.
Well, you've got to be able to protect McCown.
Yep.
I mean, you're not going to protect McCown.
Yeah, right. Guy's a fragile piece of glass. You need to protect him.
I can't believe he's 38 and playing football the way that guy takes hits.
Every year he's hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Every
Which
year.
Which is why you have Teddy Bridgewater.
I like the Bridgewater move.
Well, that guy's
I like that Bridgewater.
Do you think yeah. he'll be able to play?
You know, if
I don't know, but why not? I mean, he's a one-year deal. Why not? He's 25 years old.
Oh, I think the flyer is worthwhile. It's just ironic that their backup plan to a piece of glass is another guy who's may have had a career-ending injury. But no, a flyer for short money for a guy who was a first-round pick,
well,
I don't think that's
well,
stupid.
I think the goal, I don't think they're under any idea that they're going to make the playoffs next season. But, I mean, the idea is to draft a quarterback and see how these guys hold up. And Bryce Petty and Hackenberg, I think, are dispendable.
Oh, they're gone.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Adam Jones, a pleasure, sir.
Yeah.
I worked with you before. I enjoyed these shows very much.
It's been fun. I told you, lots of stress being graded by Bird. I didn't realize that was going to happen there again. So,
well, he was asleep for half the class.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But
it's just nothing.
Somehow, yes, Jones, Bird. I don't think that was your fault.
I enjoyed the Bird book report, though.
I don't think so.
No, I love the alien talk earlier. That was awesome.
Okay, so you saw that. You like that, too.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, there you go. That's something.
All right. So good. So that's three shows in a row. That's two shows in a row that you... No, three, because you've been in here three times.
Yeah. We're on a roll, Fred. We're doing something right.
You know, you can feel free to be honest. If you don't like the show, please
don't
tell me.
I will tell you. I have no problem telling you guys that.
Yeah, but are you doing something right or are you not? That's the question.
Ah.
Like, if Bird likes, is that what you're striving
good
for?
Good point. Is that going to give us the bump in the ratings we need?
Is that the goal?
Sure.
Listen, he's in the age demo.
Yeah.
He's from Everett. Most of our listeners are from Everett.
Sure.
I need to know if you're moving that news.
Especially with Bird working, most of on the show, a lot of people from Everett, too.
True.
Yeah. That's
true.
All right, I'll be at Game On from noon to 2 today for the NCAA tournament. I'll be wide awake. Everyone have a great weekend. Bye.